Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you this week?
Doing well, Robert. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Today on the show, we have three big stories, an update to the sexual harassment in the Kentucky legislature situation. Jasmine's going to bring us another update about Eric C. Kahn, who is no longer at large, and then we are going to talk about the United States 6th Congressional District in Kentucky, which has received a new candidate. Sounds pretty big, right, Jasmine?
Right. There's been a lot happening lately.
There's been a lot happening.
We've had a busy last few weeks.
It's been busy, and we're going to tell you all about it. Okay, Jasmine, like you just said, a lot has happened, not just around the state, but in this particular story about sexual harassment in the Kentucky legislature specifically. If just as a reminder, Jeff Hoover used to be the Kentucky Speaker of the House. It was discovered that he had settled a sexual harassment lawsuit. The Courier-Journal published it. Matt Bevin said anybody that signed a sexual harassment settlement should step down, and Jeff Hoover did so. But he remained in the House. He is still in the House of Representatives, even though he is no longer Speaker. Three other Republican representatives were also embroiled in the scandal. They have been stripped of their committee chairmanships, but they remain in the House. So that's where we were last time we checked. And any other set the level correctly there, Jasmine? Is that what you remember?
Yes, it is.
Okay, but lots has happened. On Friday of last week, the Louisville law firm Middleton Rutlinger released their investigation into the issue. So after this all came out, Republicans said, we're going to do an investigation. Democrats kind of called foul a little bit. They were like, you can't just investigate yourselves. You're just going to release the stuff that isn't so bad. You know, that's kind of doesn't look good. How can we trust you, et cetera, et cetera. So on Friday of last week, the Louisville law firm that was tasked with the investigation into the issue, Middleton Rutlinger, they released that investigation. They said that they could conclude that no public funds or inappropriate monies were used to effectuate the settlement. So that's what their conclusion said. Jasmine, is effectuate a word you use in legal briefs very often?
Yeah, I mean, it can be.
So this is like a lawyer word that gets thrown about from time to time?
I didn't know that it was a lawyer word.
I don't ever use the word effectuate. So
okay.
There you go. It's a lawyer word.
I've used it before, I guess.
Like in your with your friends?
No, probably in my role as a lawyer.
Okay, lawyer word. There you go. Okay, so the law firm, though, even though they said that no inappropriate monies were used to effectuate the settlement, they did say that they didn't have subpoena power and that there were some people who were key witnesses to the situation that they weren't able to interview, and they didn't have subpoena power, so they couldn't compel them to do so. The law firm suggested turning the investigation over to the LRC, which it does have the subpoena power, and, you know, is also bipartisan. And David Osborne, who is running things in the House, I don't want to call him the Speaker because I don't think he wants to be called the Speaker. David Osborne,
just running things in the House.
The man running things in the House, he agreed to do that. He filed a complaint with the LRC. So we will see what the LRC is doing. I don't understand why we had to spend money to pay a law firm to do this, and we didn't just do it with the LRC in the first place. That seems like the best place to put it, but maybe it was a bigger deal than they thought it was. Okay, but the big thing that happened is that Jeff Hoover's communications director, Daisy Olivo, she filed a whistleblower lawsuit last week that alleged that she had her duties taken away after she disclosed details of the relationship between Jeff Hoover and his aide. This was a big blockbuster. This was a big deal. She filed this lawsuit, and there was a lot of information in here. So according to Ms. Olivo, I hope I'm saying that right, the woman who accused Jeff Hoover was one of her subordinates, Ms. Olivo's subordinates, and, quote, shared a timeline of her physical, sexual encounters with Hoover and 3 years of text messages with him. So Ms. Olivo's accusations went significantly further than what had been reported previously by the Courier-Journal and what Representative Hoover admitted to. Ms. Olivo's lawsuit alleges that there was, in fact, a sexual relationship. He had sex with this aide, and that the settlement was paid by, quote, private funds pooled from prominent campaign donors. That's pretty big deal. That's a big blockbuster.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think what was maybe admitted to were inappropriate texts, right?
Yes. And what we had seen were some, and the Courier-Journal had access to these text messages, and it looked like some images were shared, and it appeared to be some banter back and forth between Speaker Hoover and a subordinate that was incredibly inappropriate, but this is a different level. This is, you know, sleeping with an aide who is your subordinate, which is not great. Here's a quote from the lawsuit, quoted in the Courier-Journal, quoting the lawsuit. So, Miss Olivo said Wills, who Wills is somebody else who's in Representative Hoover's office, who is also named on the lawsuit. Olivo said Wills, quote, believed the woman accusing Hoover was the aggressor in the relationship and had forced the speaker into a submissive relationship, which was damaging Representative Hoover's ability to do his job.
What?
Yeah, so I don't really know what to think. Whenever you're talking, so Jasmine, just a hint, when you're doing law stuff, if it's a lawsuit about sex, avoid the word submissive. I just want to like throw that out there because I don't think that word means what they wanted to mean there. Yeah, I think so. Like I said, Wills is Ginger Wills, I think is her name. She works in Representative Hoover's office, and it was kind of like his. I don't know if chief of staff is the appropriate word, but she seems to be like running the staff over there. And in her estimation, the woman who was doing the accusations kind of had Representative Hoover like over a rail essentially, and was able to kind of make him do stuff because she had this like
over him, mm-hmm. basically.
Exactly. And that seems to be what Wills believed. Regardless, the crux of Miss Olivo's lawsuit is that on November 1st of this year, she met with the LRC's HR department about the situation between Hoover and his aide, and that the next day, November 2nd, she was told to redirect all media inquiries for Jeff Hoover to a different member of his staff. So she's alleging that she was relieved of her duties because she blew the whistle, which is not allowed.
Right.
Okay, so for his part, Jeff Hoover completely denies any of this is true, unsurprisingly. Representative Hoover said, quote, he never engaged in sexual contact with a legislative staff member, unquote, and that the money paid to the settlement did not come from political donors. Representative Hoover alleges that the key witnesses that did not cooperate with the Middleton-Rutlinger investigation was, in fact, Mrs. Olivo. So, you know, they said in the first part of this, we talked about that investigation, and they said, you know, we couldn't get some very key people to speak on the record about this. And Representative Hoover is alleging that Miss Olivo is the person that would not speak. And one piece of evidence in this, and I don't know if this exonerates Representative Hoover from this political donors paid his settlement or not, but it does appear that Representative Hoover took out a loan of $60,000 on the day that he stepped down as speaker, and that a different loan of an unknown amount was taken out on October 27th. So in a short period of time, Representative Hoover took out a significant loan, which could have been used to pay the settlement. Representative Hoover did say that $60,000 was not the amount paid in the settlement, and $60,000 in a sexual harassment settlement is, you know, you don't pay $60,000 if you didn't do anything, I don't think.
Yeah, probably not.
I mean, that would be where my mind would go with this. Anyways, Jeff Hoover says that none of this is true, that Miss Olivo's alleging falsehoods, and, you know, for her part, Miss Olivo is not necessarily, like, she's not the person who is the victim of the sexual harassment in the lawsuit. She's a victim
right.
of other stuff. She's a whistleblower who was retaliated against, but she's not like, you know, she's not the victim of sexual harassment. So it kind of, you know, it's kind of a weird situation because, you know, we're in this political moment where we're like, believe women. But I don't know if this counts for that. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, I don't know what to think about that.
I see what you're saying about how it's complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we want to believe women, but this isn't the woman who had this happen to her. She had something different happen to her.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. And it sounds like a lot of like secondhand information as well. It's like she said that Ginger Wills said this, and
yeah.
So I don't know. I haven't read the complaint myself.
It's kind of crazy. And okay, so. You know, all this is a huge mess, clearly, and it's tough to know what to think, except for that, you know, I'm with Matt Bevin. I think at this point this is messy enough that Representative Hoover and the other people embroiled in this lawsuit probably ought to resign. Like, that's
yeah.
just probably where we are with that. But they don't seem like they're going to, so Republicans are taking other steps. So, meanwhile, there were several Republicans that pre-filed a bill for the 2018 General Assembly that would create what they're calling a tip hotline to report sexual harassment in the Kentucky legislature. The idea for this is that if a hotline is called, a sequence of events begins. Within 24 hours of receiving the tip, the perpetrator is notified, and within 30 days, the LRC staff is supposed to address the complaint. And if it's not resolved, the LRC is supposed to take more steps. The key to all this is that the tip line changes the current structure, which has complaints being reported to the same body that investigates, and that body itself reports to legislative leadership, which, you know, is a problem if legislative leadership is the perpetrator.
Correct.
Right. So this
there's a conflict of interest there.
this whole thing, like the sequence of stuff that's supposed to happen, the goal here is to inject a third party that's independent that is able to do investigations without, you know, answering to the people who might be doing the abusing. Additionally, in addition to this tip hotline, Representative C. Wesley Morgan, who's been throughout this story as somebody who's been very, very strong.
What did you call him? The imperfect messenger?
Yeah, as an imperfect messenger. Right. He's not exactly a good representative, but he seems to be very strong on the issue of sexual harassment among Republicans. He filed a resolution to remove Jeff Hoover from his seat. So if taken up, the resolution would need to pass with 2/3 majority. That's what's required to remove somebody, and it would only need to be from the House since it's a House issue. We learned recently that one of the reasons that Representative Morgan is so strong on this issue is that his daughter was the recipient of some inappropriate text messages from Representative Michael Meredith, who is another one of the people that was named in the settlement. So, yeah, that would make me mad, too.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Huge mess, right, Jasmine?
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff to wait for on this. Bills are pre-filed. We still don't really know. This seems like the pressure is starting to ramp up. The governor was on WHAS talking on the radio again about this issue, calling for the people who paid the settlement to resign. And we have the LRC who's now going to be doing this investigation. So there's still a ways to go, but we wanted to keep everybody up to date. Very complicated. Oh, yeah, and also the lawsuit's now been filed, and we'll see what happens there. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot going on.
Yeah.
Well, something else pretty big has happened that we've talked about before. Eric C. Kahn, many shows ago, we talked about Eric C. Kahn, an Eastern Kentucky lawyer who cut off his GPS monitor while pending sentencing for federal fraud charges.
Yeah.
So if you'll remember, Eric C. Kahn is quite the character who had some interesting like YouTube video advertisements and lots of fun billboards in Eastern Kentucky.
The Obama girl was in one of them.
The Obama girl was in one of his videos. He has like a trailer park of law offices where employees wear shirts with his picture.
A big replica of the Lincoln Memorial.
Right. And a large replica of the Lincoln Memorial. So he's a very interesting guy who created maybe the biggest Social Security fraud scheme of all time.
Yes.
So he was pending sentencing for these federal fraud charges, and he was on home incarceration pending sentencing. So that means you have a GPS monitor around your ankle and can't leave your home. And he cut that off. So he taunted the FBI for a little bit when he first went on the run. He was sending like emails
to like journalists and law enforcement. Yeah,
right.
Really,
and he was spotted in New Mexico at some point. But he has finally been captured and extradited back to the United States. So a story from a Honduras reporter said that Kahn was arrested by the country's Technical Agency for Criminal Investigation. I guess that's kind of, you know, their version of like an FBI.
Sure.
It didn't say when he was arrested, but it did include photos of him with masked agents standing over him. The story said that a SWAT unit arrested him as he was leaving a restaurant in La Ceiba in Honduras, and that restaurant was apparently a Pizza Hut.
The man's last meal as a free man was at a Pizza Hut.
And so, like, there's this picture, and you see, like, some pizza crusts on a plate, but then you also see a bowl of soup. So a lot of people are questioning why this Pizza Hut buffet had soup.
Man, yum restaurants in other parts of the world are really weird.
Right, they're very different, have a lot more menu options than we have here.
I think
sometimes
Pizza Hut should move into the soup. And I mean, if we've learned anything from here, it's that Pizza Hut should serve soup.
Yeah.
Everywhere should
serve
soup.
They already serve pasta, so why not add soup? Another story said that they found him because he turned on his Wi-Fi in the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they'd been tracking him for a couple weeks in Honduras. They had reason to believe he was there, and they got him in the Pizza Hut.
So, got him in the Pizza Hut.
He arrived at Bluegrass Airport in Lexington on Tuesday. And I heard that when they got there and they, you know, got on U.S. soil out of the plane, he said, "It's good to be home." So I guess he hasn't lost his sense of humor. One of his former employees, Curtis Wyatt, has been charged in helping him flee. And he has a trial date set in February for those charges. They had allegedly been working on the escape plan for a year.
I mean, it didn't seem like, well, I don't know. He did end up in Honduras, but like it, and I guess he got away and was on the lam for like 6 months or whatever.
Right. So they worked on the plan for a year, and he was on the run for half of
yeah,
the time that they worked on his escape plan.
Yeah.
And Eric C. Conn was also supposed to testify against a co-conspirator in his fraud case before he went on the run. He was sentenced in his absence on the original case. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison, but now he faces escape charges as well. So maybe they could really hit him on the escape charges and he could serve a lot more time. He pled not guilty to the escape at arraignment, which is, you know, what all people do.
Yeah.
And he has a trial date set in February for that. He could also face penalties for bond violations on his original case. His attorney went on the record saying that Conn had a lot of guts to do what he did.
Probably true.
So I don't know. That sounds kind of like an admission to me.
He did escape. It's kind of like, I always think it's funny. Like, you know, of course you're going to plead not guilty, but come on, man.
Right, yeah. He probably does not have a good case on the escape. Maybe they can work something out in sentencing, or maybe he has a trial and they just stack up as many years as they can. I don't know.
I mean, it's like, what are you going to give on the escape thing? You know what? You did cut off, like, we have the monitor. It's got a knife. You cut it with some scissors or whatever, so.
Right, so in Kentucky, escape charges have to run consecutive to your charges. So, like, when you get sentenced and you have multiple charges, you can agree to have them run concurrent. So, at the same time, right, you know, a concurrent sentence of 10 years. But if you pick up an escape, that has to be a consecutive sentence. You don't get to roll that into everything else.
Yeah.
I don't really know how federal escape charges work.
I would assume it's kind of the same way. I don't know. I'm sure that maybe they have some more leeway.
In Kentucky, it's a Class D felony, 1 to 5 years.
Well, if we only had a federal lawyer around here. Yeah. I don't know. Where's Dan Cannon? He's right here somewhere. Okay, Jasmine. Thank you for telling us about your Eric C. Conn. And also, like, if you guys want to know more about this story, we did a longer show where we talked a lot about Eric C. Conn. And it's kind of old, but it was good. I liked it. There was a lot of stuff that we learned about Eric C.
He's
Conn and doing
that. He's
just
quite a character.
Yeah. That was a pretty fun episode. So, all right, Jasmine. The last big story for today is about the District 6 U.S. congressional race in Kentucky, which has a new Democratic challenger, Jim Gray, the mayor of Lexington. So after months of speculation, Lexington Mayor Jim Gray did announce that he was running for that seat in 2018. Jim Gray has been the mayor of Lexington for 6 years, and before that he ran his family business, Gray Construction, and he served on the LFUCG Council as an at-large member. And in Lexington, what they do this thing where you have your, like, regional, where you live, you have a councilman, but they elect three councilmen from the whole city, and those are at-large, and the one who gets the most votes, they become the vice mayor, and Jim Gray was the vice mayor before he later became the mayor. So that's what Jim Gray's been up to. Last year, he ran for U.S. Senate. We remember that, against Rand Paul. He was pretty soundly defeated, although he did significantly better in Kentucky than Hillary Clinton, who was at the top of the ticket. In the 6th district, Jim Gray actually received more votes than Rand Paul. He actually won by 5 points in a really bad year for Democrats.
Right.
So he won by 5, while Andy Parr, the Republican who's currently serving there, he defeated Nancy Kemper 61-39%, so like 22 points. Yeah, 22 points. It's a pretty significant difference, and Jim Gray actually won in that district. So we'll see what might happen if Jim Gray managed to win the primary, which is not guaranteed because he has two opponents already in the Democratic primary, former Marine Corps pilot Amy McGrath and State Senator Reggie Thomas. We did a show several weeks ago with Ben Carter when we talked about these two. You know, we've talked a lot about these two, so we aren't going to talk too much more about their backgrounds. But when it was announced that Jim Gray was getting into this race, the National Journal Hotline, which is this kind of subscription-only magazine, they reported that John Yarmuth had been actively recruiting Gray to run the seat. I only know this because somebody screenshotted some stuff and put it on Twitter. And according to the National Journal Hotline, John Yarmuth believed that Reggie Thomas would get out of the primary if Jim Gray entered it. And Yarmuth is actually quoted in this little piece saying, quote, "He's a two-term mayor with a 75% approval rating and 100% name ID. I think he wins fairly easily without a wave." So John Yarmuth is on the Gray train, as it were.
And I think that's a pretty newsworthy thing that John Yarmuth believes that one of the other primary candidates would get out of the race if Jim Gray entered it.
Yeah, that is something that was kind of surprising to see. You know, Gray in his Senate race, he tacked kind of more to the middle. He was more of a centrist that some right. of the more progressive folks in the state would have liked during his bid for the Senate. And the state of Miami was really kind of decried to some as dismissive of the other two candidates. You know, Reggie Thomas is an African American, and people are and Amy McGrath is a woman, and some people are like really excited to see people who look different or be elected to this position potentially. Of course, you know, Jim Gray also is a gay man, and I don't think Kentucky's ever elected a gay person to federal office either. So there you go. For his part, Reggie Thomas tweeted, quote, "A competitive Democratic primary is good for the party and will make me a stronger candidate when I face Andy Barr next November. We have spent the last 6 months building a Kentucky-based grassroots movement that will position me as the strongest candidate to beat Barr." And his other tweet was, quote, "Not sure why John Yarmuth would think that. I am in it to win it," unquote. So he doesn't sound like
well,
he's...
Well, yeah. That quashes that, I yeah. guess, right?
So John Yarmuth, I don't know what he was thinking there. I don't know if he really even knows Reggie that well. He may. I don't... You know, they're from different parts of the state, and they serve in different chambers. But, yeah, it doesn't seem like Reggie...
Right, so maybe that was just, like, pure speculation.
It could be. And that,
I don't know.
You know, be careful who you're talking to. When you're talking to the National Journal reporters, you never know when it's going to get tweeted out. So Reggie doesn't seem like he's getting out. And then Amy McGrath, you know, she had a longer Twitter essay. I'm not going to read it. You can find it if you want to. But mostly she talked about how Mayor Gray was representative of establishment politics. And she talked about her small donors who are myriad. There's a lot of people who've given money to her campaign. So Vote Vets, which is an organization that supports Democratic veterans to run for office, they tweeted further support for her. And Amy McGrath ended her tweets yesterday quoting Admiral David Garrigut when he said, "Damn the torpedoes. Full speed ahead." So it doesn't seem like she's going anywhere either.
No.
So, you know, in addition to Amy McGrath saying all this stuff on Twitter, McGrath's campaign chair, Mark Nicholas, who we've talked about on the show before, he used to be a very important person in Kentucky politics, ran the Bluegrass Roots Bluegrass Roots blog and had worked for Ben Chandler in the past. He wrote a really long Facebook essay about Jim Gray running for this seat. In the piece, he continually called Mayor Gray by the diminutive Jimmy. Jimmy this and Jimmy that. And he couched it as saying that they'd been friends since 2003, and that's why he was calling him Jimmy. But it seemed to me... That was not the reason why he was doing that. Nicholas closed his post by highlighting Lexington's murder rate, which, quote, "has gone from less than New York City the day he was sworn in 2011 to nearly double that of NYC last year and triple the NYC murder rate so far this year," which is some pretty coded language to kind of see where this race is headed.
Yeah.
So that's really disappointing. You know, I know that you get into politics to win, but, you know, as Democrats, you don't want to, like, use this coded racial language to kind of win, and that's kind of too bad. So hopefully Amy McGrath, you know, sees that her campaign chair is saying stuff like that and is able to kind of intervene and get him to stop doing that. But you know, I hope that this isn't you know, this is what they say in all the primary campaigns on either side. I hope we keep the primary about the issues. So we'll see. As far as I can tell, Jasmine, I think Jim Gray is the favorite. Amy McGrath has shown the ability to raise a lot of money. She's really brought in the cash, but Jim Gray is a very, very rich person, and he can finance himself. And he has much bigger name ID, and he's pretty popular in Lexington, as far as I can tell. And I think, you know, and the key to all this, too, he has a record. And I think he's actually pretty proud of the record. He has some achievements he can point to in Lexington that he's like, you know, we did this when I was the mayor of Lexington. I want to go to Washington and do a lot of these same things. I don't know. We'll see. What do you think?
Will he get questions about the pit in Lexington?
You know, the pit is such a debacle, of course. he has been working on that. He was first out of the gate saying it was a bad idea to tear down that block to start with. So, I mean, he has a leg to stand on there because, I mean, one of the things he predicted is, you know, these people that are you're giving the land away to have a terrible record. And if you give them this land, they probably won't use it. He said that and he was right. I mean,
right.
They've explored several different options and how to deal with it. But, you know, the webs just kind of they own it. So, I mean, there's not much you can do except for, like, do eminent domain, which is a scary idea, but probably, I mean, if Jim Gray was a mayor for another 4 years, I fully expect him to have worked towards that. So,
right.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be interesting to see how Jim Gray runs this campaign. If he tries to be a more progressive candidate than he did during when he ran against Rand Paul for U.S. Senate. Right now, Reggie Thomas definitely seems like the most progressive candidate, and then Amy McGrath seems kind of like the centrist, I guess.
She has a, you know, a military airplane in her ads. She was a pilot,
right?
But you know, instruments of war in your campaign ads is something more of like a Republican type move,
right?
But
definitely. And she said that, you know, he was representative of establishment politics, but she kind of, even though she's never been in office before, she kind of seems like an establishment type candidate.
Yeah,
to me, I guess.
I was having a conversation about this with somebody yesterday, and I kind of think that like Amy McGrath is the vessel through which the Ben Chandler folks in the Kentucky Democratic Party are like trying to like reestablish themselves. You know, they've
okay,
kind of been,
that makes sense.
They've kind of been out of it for a while. You know, like Ben Chandler, like he lost to Andy Barr, and like those people, you know,
they kind of just went back to being lawyers and
yeah, and you know,
the like
the people who were like in office then were the Beshear people and the Lundergans and the Chandler people that had, you know, been attached to that guy. I mean, they had a couple of people that they were close with in the legislature, but, you know, they haven't really had anybody in a big office for a while. And I think it's like, you know, they found somebody that they thought could win, and were like, we're all in on this. And so I think if it gets dirty, and it may very well get pretty dirty, it's because those people are like, no, we're going to show that we can win still. I don't know if it's going to have as much to do about her as it is. I really do think this is kind of getting away from her at this point already. So who knows? You know, she's a candidate and we don't know much about her. She is a very successful military person. And the thing about very disciplined military people is they're often very disciplined. So she may be able to create some order there. So who knows? We will indeed see. Jasmine, are you ready for some quick hits?
Go for it.
Okay, Jasmine, the man who was denied a marriage license by Kim Davis in Round County has filed to run for county clerk against her. So good luck to him.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
I love that story.
You know, Moorhead is a pretty progressive town. Like, you know, your county clerk, people oftentimes don't even think about, you know, who you're voting for. It just kind of is who it is. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he won. It's like one of the most Democratic counties in the entire state. Okay, the next one. U of L has been taken off of probation by SACS, the accrediting agency. It looks like the steps taken by the GOP in the last session were enough to please the accrediting agency, which I was kind of surprised with. I mean, Matt Bevin still fired the board.
Right. It seems kind of like a quick move to say like, oh, you're good now. But I guess, you know, with James Ramsey out in the audit and I don't know. It seems like they've gotten rid of a lot of people that were part of their transparency issue. Mm-hmm. But I guess good for them.
Yeah, good for them. And then lastly, Ronnie Ellis of CHNI, he reported today, December the 6th, that Representative Bart Rowland in the Kentucky legislature said that the overwhelming majority of House Republicans have asked Governor Bevin not to call a special session this year. So Matt Bevin's been out saying, you know, I said 100% sure that I was going to file a special session, and I'm going to do it. And it seems
here
like
here we are, December 6th.
Yeah, and it was kind of the deal where, you know, clearly they weren't prepared. The bill came out, and there was a huge reaction against it. I think much larger than they were anticipating. Then all this stuff with Jeff Hoover happened, and Matt Bevin was like, "I'm a man of my word. That's super important." And like, it's like, no, okay, well, you have a good excuse. There's a good reason
right,
for us not
it's
to
fine.
Tackle this.
Right.
Yeah, let's just not do it right now. And so, we'll see what happens. Matt Bevin's not an easily persuaded man.
No, you know, even though this report says overwhelming majority of Republicans, I think Governor Bevin is going to do what he wants, no matter what.
Without a doubt. All right, Jasmine, that's it for this week. Pretty big week, huh?
It has been, yeah.
It has been. All right, well, Jasmine, how can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at MyOldKYPod. They can like our Facebook page, My Old Kentucky Podcast. We post our show notes on Medium, so you can check those out. And you can find our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we will see everybody next week.